Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson. Lori spends her days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. She talks to students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. She's here to share their stories along with other insights with you. So let's talk learning disabilities.
Hey everybody, this is Lori and welcome back to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. Today, we are going to talk a little bit with a new member of our team. I have a new partner in crime and I could not be more excited to have Kara Fennell with us today. She has been with us since the middle of February. It's now, where are we? Almost end of April. We are the end of April. Holy crap. And so, Kara, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for stepping a little bit out of your comfort zone to do this with me today.
Literally.
But I really thought, so I'm gonna let Kara tell you guys a little bit about herself, but really, I have not been in the school setting since, like, I don't know, 2012. And so it's really nice to have someone who's kind of fresh from the schools to share us a share a little bit about sort of what's going on there and what it looks like moving from a school setting to a private setting when you're looking at learning disabilities and ADHD and assessments for those. So, Kara, first, just tell everybody a little bit about you, sort of how you came to Texas and how you landed as an educational diagnostician.
Yes, sure. So I am originally from New York City. I went to school in Washington, D.C., Howard University, and I did my graduate studies at the George Washington University, where I studied special education, but specifically for infant and toddlers. So my expertise or my background is in the littles. I love the littles.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, see? Fun fact. Yes, so that led me here to Texas, and I became a PPCD teacher.
What does PPCD stand for?
Stood for Preschool Program for Children with Disabilities. It is not PPCD anymore. Now it's ECSE, I believe, Early Childhood Special Education.
Could we have more acronyms?
All the time. New acronyms. So yes. So I did that for 8, 9 years, something like that. And then I became more interested in learning how to diagnose, if you will, the students that were coming to me in my class. I was interested in the testing. I was interested, my favorite part of, not my favorite, one of my favorite parts has always been talking to parents. So I actually liked the ARD process. And so my curiosity got the best of me, and then I decided to go back to school to become an educational diagnostician.
And if you guys listened to our last podcast where I talked to Christine, the special education advocate, where we talked about IEPs, if you'll remember in Texas, we call the IEP meeting an ARD meeting because nobody else calls it that but us.
That's very true. And yes. And you know what? I pride myself in not using acronyms, and I just did.
It's so hard not to, because that's kind of like how we've been professionally raised, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And so, we talk to a lot of the times we're talking to people that know what we're talking about. So
sure.
Yes.
So when you started testing, did you start testing the littles? Were you doing preschool evaluations?
That was a career goal of mine. No, I have not. Kindergarten is the youngest.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
What were some working? I'm curious, when you're working in a classroom full of preschool kids, what was the most pronounced like disability that you served? Like, were they mostly speech and language kids? Was it just a wide variety?
It was typically a variety. A lot of the times there were students with autism. Sometimes there were students in Texas. We have an eligibility called non-categorical early childhood. So that's kind of like a developmental delay where there's global delays. So sometime there were those students. And then we also had some students with speech impairments as well.
Okay, so can you talk to us a little bit as a school, first of all, a school diagnostician, which in most states is like your school psychologist, your school psychometrist. There are about, I don't know, 10 states that have diagnosticians. But yes. Basically, as a diagnostician, your job is to assess for disabilities, really mostly learning disabilities, right? And determine with the committee, the IEP committee, if kids are eligible to receive services through special education. That's so correct. Going back to the days of when you were, which was, you know, a year ago or not even, when you were assessing kids in the public school, what was the route to identify a child as having a learning disability? What did you have to do? And as a committee, you all had to agree to what?
Sure. So fortunately, at the previous district, I've worked in two districts in North Texas. And the previous district, diagnosticians are part of the committee that determines if we're going to move forward with a special education evaluation. So I was lucky to be a part of that to determine if the student needed more intervention before we looked to see if it was a specific learning disability or if this was a good referral and we would move forward. And so what that process looked like was that I would obtain informed consent from the parent to explain, you know, all of the areas that we were going to assess for to determine if their child met eligibility for one of the disability categories. And then that involved, once I got consent, we had a referral question. So we weren't like just trying to find a disability. Sometimes students had difficulty with reading. And so we knew we were specifically looking to determine if there was a specific learning disability in reading or dyslexia. So we have a referral question. And so once we know what that is, it was my job to, basically I was the case manager. So I got all the parties involved that were gonna complete the evaluation. So if it were a speech therapist or an occupational therapist, I would let them know. I was in charge of doing the cognitive and the achievement testing. And also I was sort of the person that communicated with the parent. What else did I do? It was only 2 months ago. Let's see.
But once you finished all that testing, then what were the guidelines, I guess, to say that yes, this student does meet eligibility or no, they don't?
So each eligibility category has their own set of criteria. So it just depends on what we were looking for and what other parties were involved. So for example, if a student had the referral question was whether ADHD impacted them in the classroom, well, the previous district that I worked in, we had a school psychologist. And so she took the lead as the, you know, of the multidisciplinary team. And she did the assessment in that area. And so she determined the criteria, if that criteria was met. I still did the cognitive and the achievement testing. Together, we decided if it was impacting the student in the classroom enough to where they required specially designed instruction.
So what about for a learning disability? What does that criteria look like these days? And I know it's different in every state and in every district.
Yes.
To an extent. Yeah,
so we use a pattern of strengths and weaknesses kind of.
Pretend like I'm a parent. Like, how would you explain that to me if you were going to tell me that my child either met criteria or didn't meet criteria? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, so basically that meant that there needed to be the child after the assessment had been completed with the actual physical testing and with all of the data that we gathered from the parent, from the classroom teacher, from our classroom observations. If there was a weakness in a cognitive process that directly correlated to a weakness in the testing that we completed in the specific subject, so like reading, for example, then, and if they correlate, then we determine that there is a specific learning disability in that area.
In addition, I know that we've talked before and it's been a while, but that there also has to be an educational need for those services, like you just said, with ADHD,
Absolutely.
But it's the same with all the disabilities, right?
Absolutely.
So wouldn't you say though, if the child has gone through that referral process that you participated in prior to the evaluation, that clearly there must be an educational need? Like, does that ever come up that like, well, maybe they don't really have that big of a need?
It does sometimes, but sometimes after we've gone through the evaluation, we can determine that accommodations would just be a more appropriate thing to help the student be more successful, and that they didn't need to be,
which they could get
through what's called a 504.
Okay. Plan. Okay. That makes sense.
Yes, yes, yes. And so they wouldn't need specifically designed instruction. They wouldn't need someone to teach them, pull them out of the classroom, or be in the classroom with them to help them on specific things that they could keep up with these accommodations put in place.
So I'm curious, as somebody who's tested in the public schools and now privately, how important do you feel like the cognitive testing is? Because I know there's been a lot of, there's been a lot of talk lately, especially like with dyslexia testing, that we really don't need to test cognitive skills, which is an IQ test. And I hate saying that because I don't care about what the IQ is, but looking at all those processing skills, just personally speaking, mm-hmm. I think it's super important. I mean, how do you feel?
I agree. I think it's helpful because it helps guide the intervention. It's helpful to learn, to know how students learn best or how an individual learns best. And I feel like with the intervention, you can hone in on the strengths. You can use the strengths to help close the gaps.
Agree. I do agree. I don't think we'll ever get away from it. I know there are people that wish we would. I don't think it's ever going to go away. But anyway, that was a side note. So now that you're testing, now that we've sort of shaken the public school off of you and got roped you into the private sector, how have you adjusted and how do you feel like what you're doing now is different, good or bad?
Well, let me just say that I love what I'm doing now. It's been eye-opening because, as I mentioned, I've been working with the littles, and specifically when I was in public school, I had my caseload where it was still the younger students. It's just been very eye-opening to see that how learning disabilities, ADHD, can impact adults and college students. It's just been very insightful for me. And I'm just super curious about accommodations, interventions, things that can happen for adults as well, specifically for people who are just finding this out as an adult. That has just been super fascinating to me. Okay, so what was the question?
What's been different in the good or bad in doing the testing, privately, sort of in a, we're still looking for learning disabilities. I think the end game is very different for what we do because we're not trying to qualify anybody for a particular service. Yes. We're just trying to help them understand strengths, weaknesses, and if there's something going on that's causing them to struggle. Mm-hmm. Outside of that difference, and all the extra paperwork you don't have to do, obviously. Anything about the actual testing? I know.
Hallelujah.
Can we get an amen? anything about the actual testing, though, that you feel like is different, good or bad, from what you did in the school setting?
I think that my experience in the school district has definitely helped with the planning of the assessments, like what assessments to give. Because that doesn't really change. I mean, the actual assessment, but not the type of assessment, depending on what you're looking for, that doesn't change. So I feel like it's definitely helped me. But you have been a major asset in helping me with the things that I wasn't able to assess in the school district, like ADHD, for example. In my last district, the school psychologist, like I mentioned before, would take the lead on that. And so I didn't have any parts of it really.
Don't you think you could have?
I think with some training, absolutely.
Yeah, I and think hindsight.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it would have been beneficial also. I would have been better able to contribute to the intervention plan. I feel like ADHD, we kind of think of the H part of it, the hyperactive part of it. And sometimes maybe students could be overlooked because they have inattentive type and they're not a behavior problem or they don't stand out. And so maybe in those meetings where we discuss you know, students, whether we're going to move forward with the referral, maybe I could have, you know, had a different lens or had other questions to ask in place of the psychologist, because the school psychologist was typically there. But when she wasn't, you know, maybe I could have just put on her hat for a little bit, if right. you will, ask some more guiding questions. The other thing that's been super insightful since I've been here, since you asked, is learning about visual processing. Like, over the moon fascinated with that. I feel like if teachers, evaluators, teachers, principals, parents, yes. the whole world, if they knew what a visual processing disorder was and how it impacts a student, I feel like our evaluations, well, for one, we wouldn't have as many evaluations, because the need for specially designed instruction wouldn't be there, because we'd be addressing the root cause of the reading concerns. So I think that that has been super insightful for me since working here.
Thinking back to your time in public school and kids that you tested that were kind of head scratchers, right? Mm-hmm. Like they struggled with reading, but they didn't really meet all the criteria for dyslexia. Like, can you think right. back now, like where did those kids typically end up? To no fault of anybody, but normally where would they go?
Exactly. They would be denied services because there was no educational need. There was a disconnect between the testing and the data and then what they looked like in the classroom. And so because they didn't meet the criteria, you know, it would make a lot of people unhappy, specifically teachers, and because they would be lost, like they wouldn't know what else to do. But our recommendation was always to just provide more intervention from the general education side, tutoring, you know, more small group. And if there continued to be a concern, then they would have to just refer again.
Which is crazy.
Very much so.
It seems silly. But I've had families that have had the opposite, where they didn't meet all the criteria, but because of the weaker performance in the classroom, they did qualify that student.
Yeah. And it's case by case basis.
Yeah, I would say it goes either way, right? But I think mm-hmm. then now you're putting a student through a program, especially if they go with dyslexia, which is how it normally presents itself.
Sure.
That is torture for that poor child, because that's not the intervention they need. And usually those kids aren't making any progress, the progress that they're looking for.
Yes. You know, perhaps we need to do more podcasts on visual processing so that everybody can understand.
I'm telling you what, right? I know. And it just continues to fascinate me. I still continue to learn. Yeah. Matter of fact, we had that in service not too long ago with Dr. Mm-hmm. Shalette from Houston, and where he talked about ADHD and visual processing. Super fascinating. But I met with a parent today and I was like, gosh, I don't know. I definitely see the visual processing and I see the ADHD, but let's address the visual processing first and let's just see what happens. And so, the there's still so much more to learn. And I agree. That has been something that has been very valuable to a lot of our clients. So I'm excited that you've been able to get on board. How do we spread the word? How do we get that information? And could we share it with schools? Would they be able to do anything with it? Like if the diagnosticians at a school all knew about it, could they refer a parent to an optometrist?
I don't know. Exactly, because maybe the school would have to pay for it if it were something that we were saying that the student needed to be more successful. So, I don't know, is the answer to my question.
I know. Yes. What would you say to a parent who is starting to feel that concern about their child's progress in school, whether it's an elementary student or an older student whose struggles have just all of a sudden started to appear? What advice do you give them based on what you know about approaching the school and mm-hmm. obviously yes. doing things privately is not free. So how would you advise them?
So I would advise them to, one, be in contact with your child's teacher. Like that is number one. I would also advise them to be involved with their child in terms of homework, schoolwork, just kind of knowing where they are, talking to their child, because, you know, we can talk to teachers all, you know, all we want, but ultimately the child knows how they feel, what they have difficulties with. And sometimes we don't always ask our kids because, you know, they're kids, right? The adults know. Right. So I would start there. And then, you know, after progress hasn't been made, after different things have been tried, tutors, intervention in school, then, you know, I would move forward with either the school district evaluating or doing something privately. Sometimes when we receive calls from parents that call us, they say that the school doesn't, you know, the school is not willing to move forward yet. And so if you have this, you know, paternal instinct that something more is going on, then if you have the means, definitely do some private testing to figure out what's going
on. The mom gut is real. Mom gut is real.
It is. Definitely.
100%. I think the other thing too that I feel like I've become more attuned to, and I'm not sure if it's just because we see kids outside of school, but I do feel like we see a lot more of the emotional side effects of continued struggle.
Sure. Sure.
And maybe we hear more from the parent. I don't know why, or maybe I've just, I don't know, but I feel like that we're more sort of in tune with that and the anxiety and the depression that can come along with those extended periods of struggle and frustration.
Sure.
And so I think that's something that parents are dealing with.
I think that is also the benefit of having worked closely with my school psychologist, is that that is an asset for school districts that do have that school psychologist position, and many of them, because I feel like when they're doing that emotional behavioral section of the evaluation, you know, it's thorough, and they can, you know, they can dig a little bit deeper and see how it's impacting the student. So, but I agree. I do agree that we are able to see it better because schools are more, I guess, concerned with the academics of it all. And unfortunately, it's the whole child that we need to be, or the whole person that we need to be, you know, looking at.
Do you feel like you're able to explain the results and have the, you know, ensure the parent understanding and get that feeling from the parent that they really understand? Do you feel like you were able to do that in the schools the way you can do it now? Like, do you feel like you had the time to be able to do that in the schools? Because to me, that's huge.
Yes, yes, yes. I do. I do feel like I've always been able to do that. Now, like you said, the time. I've always had to make time in the previous district, because that was what required of us to do that. To discuss it if the parent wanted to before the ARD meeting. I feel like my understanding of ADHD and explaining it has developed in the last 2 months. I was a nervous wreck in the beginning, but I feel like I have a better understanding.
Like already a pro.
I wouldn't go that far, but I'm getting there.
So if you were going to give advice to some classroom teachers about what ADHD looks like and what not to miss, what do you feel like teachers don't get about ADHD?
I feel like, again, the attentive type. So what that looks like is the not paying attention, or the delayed reaction of the, wait, what? Or the zoning out, or you just said something and then, you know, you have to repeat directions several times in order for them to get an understanding. For their reading, it could be like the reading comprehension, like having to go back and reread what they read in order to answer a question. What else?
It's so easy to spot those hyperactive ones, isn't it? Like, I mean, that is just like a no-brainer, but they're not the ones that fall through the cracks, unfortunately.
Well, it's because they can be disruptive, and who wants a disruptive classroom?
Right.
So we were eager to get them help.
The daydreamers are quiet, and they're usually sweet and follow the rules. They just aren't always listening.
Exactly.
And as it for a teacher, that's not, I can live with that.
Exactly.
But meanwhile, those kids are just falling further behind. So yeah, I agree. I think more awareness around what that looks like. If we could share more awareness about the inattentive ADHD and the visual processing, I feel like that would be a huge milestone for us. Because I feel like those are the two things that are getting overlooked. Agreed. And sometimes misdiagnosed.
Agreed.
And that's a big task. So, but we got to start somewhere, right? So if just talking about it here it's a good place to start.
Yes, definitely.
So, well, thank you for taking a few minutes. I know we've been busy and I just wanted to grab you for a few minutes and share with everybody, let everyone meet you virtually. And then also just kind of get a take on what it's been like it's a big transition and it's the same, but it's not.
Exactly. It was a well-needed transition, though. It's like a breath of fresh air, actually.
Good. Obviously, I enjoy it. But I do. It's like you get to focus on the parts of your job that you always loved. You get to just really do that.
Yes. And less paperwork.
And yes. And
I don't have to take work home.
Ugh, no. No, no, no.
Yeah.
No. Well, thank you guys. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions for me or you have any suggestions about future episodes, you can always email me at letstalklearningdisabilities@gmail.com. We appreciate you spending a little time with us today and hope everyone has a great day. Thanks, Kara.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.